Be aware.
Yeah.
Don't say anything bad.
No.
Being recorded. Let's see, we're just about 7 o'clock.
Yep.
Everybody's kind of running to their phones.
Hi, guys.
Greg is running to a parking
Hi,
space.
Gregory.
I am running to a parking spot, and I'm going to take lunch, so I'm going to keep my camera off here for a bit.
Okay. You're good, man. And there's John. Hello, John.
Barb.
Barb's here. We have our Indiana contingent and our California contingent. And our
Kentucky
contingent. So I'm going to begin. As people are probably still signing in. And I'm going to ask us to take a moment to become aware of our connection with one another. To set our focus or our intention on our own growth and the growth of one another. And all beings who are aligned to this work and work that's similar to this one. And what's interesting is that as the evening progresses, we don't have to force ourselves into that kind of intention. It's just there, which to me is very gratifying. And I was reminded of Scott Peck's definition of love when I was doing that little introduction. He said, love is the ability to stretch oneself for one's own spiritual growth or the growth of another. Love is the ability to stretch oneself for one's own personal growth or the growth of another. I think that's great. Is there anything left over? If not, I'm going to begin with the last paragraph on page 84. This will be kind of our overlap from last week. Paul asks, is there destruction in divine potential? There can be, yes, but never of what is required. When you have a house with no foundation, the house may fall at the first wind. If the foundation of the house is strong, you may repair the house if that is what is required. If a new house must be built upon the old structure, you will know it and it will be beneficial. To destroy the old to create the new may be a requirement in some cases. But as the divine, the Christ itself, knows itself in love, it brings no harm to what it meets. You may learn your lessons individually and collectively through force, through anger, or through love. And the love that is brought to your fellows as you recognize them as fellow travelers seeking to meet himself, herself, through each interaction with the divine that is present in all. Most of you know probably a bit of my history, that I was a Roman Catholic brother for 27 years. And when that part of my life was over, I never thought it was going to be over, but when that part of my life was over and I knew that, it was time to move on in another direction. But nothing really went away. People used to ask me, are you still Catholic? And I said, well, that's like asking me if I'm still Irish, all right? Because it's part of my heritage. It's the way I learn things. So it's still part of my heritage. I might look at it very differently. I might look at what I learned literally in years past. I might begin to look at that metaphysically, which I might not have done before. But it's really interesting. Nothing got destroyed in the process. My religious vocation didn't get destroyed. My religion didn't get destroyed. All of that's still part of the foundation that I live in and with. It's just that I view it or look at it in a very different way, and I'm probably influenced by it in a very different way than I might have been before. I feel very fortunate that I didn't have to, some people might have to do this, I didn't literally have to pound something to death or pound it into submission before I could move on. It was just sort of a continuing gradual evolution of spirit that in most ways was fairly gentle. It wasn't like cutting off an arm or a leg. Sometimes letting go of some stuff was difficult, but it wasn't, for the most part, it wasn't for me. I feel very fortunate with that. But part of that too, I think, is my willingness to be open to the newness of things, to the changes that my soul was asking for. That I wasn't really fighting or wasn't really struggling with anything. I didn't know what was coming next, but I wasn't in a struggle with what was next, what came about. So I'm not sure whether some of you might have had a similar kind of gentler experience or whether it was kind of like really like pulling your hair out by the roots.
Mindless gentle.
Yeah. It's kind of like I look back and I go, here I am. How'd I get here? I was over there and now I'm here.
Mine was forced.
Yeah. How'd you work on that, Greg?
Oh, Greg.
The state of Indiana took control of my life for 4.5 years.
What did Gregory?
I said the state of Indiana took control of my life.
I see. Okay.
4.5 years, which provided me an opportunity to learn how to live moment to moment and read a lot of things that I never would have probably read.
Well, thanks for sharing that, Greg.
Uh-huh.
I hope that didn't bring you back too much.
No, it was a gift.
See, I think that if you don't mind me building on that for a moment, it is. And I know I said this in one of my classes, pardon me, because sometimes I get my Sundays and my Tuesdays mixed up. And I'm not sure what I said on Tuesday, and it might have been the same thing I said on Sunday, it might not have been. But one of the things that always strikes me, and I remember somebody talking about this a while ago, is that for each one of us here, something happened in our lives that started us on this conscious path. For some people, it was a divorce, losing a job, or a loved one, breakup of a relationship. Could be a lot of different things. That somehow or another, what it did was it sort of gave us the opportunity, and all of us cooperated with that opportunity, we wouldn't be here. It created the opportunity for us to stop and say, well, I need to take stock in my life. I need to take a look at what's going on in my life. It could be recovery from an addiction. I need to take a look at the way things are right now, because something that I'm doing, or maybe everything that I'm doing, just isn't working anymore. And so once we are open to that, some people and classes and books and teachers and whatever start coming in our direction. And they might have been there for a really long time, but we never recognized them before.
It's like God does for us what we can't do for ourselves.
Yep. And again, I know we sometimes use the language of separation with that. But what we're talking about is the divine self is doing for us what the small self can't do. If you want to put it in these words, okay? The divine self is doing for me what my small self can't.
When I experienced my 30th day of sobriety, I had like a little vision when I was out walking on the beach, and it was God showing me that I had to build a new house.
Okay.
And that he was going to build it, and he was going to be the foundation of this house. And that it would be a foundation so strong that no man could bring us under.
No storm can shake my inmost calm.
And I even saw that in my dream, Jerry, that beautiful. He showed me these men were like building a house on the beach. The construction guys were building a beach house. And he showed me just in a vision, these waves coming up, very forceful. And he said to me that even the waves, I can take out that house just like that. But this is going to be a house no man can bring us under. And they were putting all kinds of nails and wood into that house and building it so strong on that beach. But he said he could take it down just like that with one flash of the wave.
Mm-hmm.
It was a big experience for me.
So anybody who comes along and huffs and puffs, they can't blow your house down, right?
I hope not. They can this one, yes, but not my spiritual house.
It's built on rock.
My spiritual house is, but this one, a hurricane could come or a tornado and wipe it right out. This one.
Each of you comes to us with a desire for union. And the desire for union has been responded to you by us in the text we have brought through Paul. But the union itself is not the ideal, or not the goal. If there is an ideal or a goal, the ideal would be manifestation of the divine in a devout way as you understand yourself as participatory in the reclamation of the kingdom. That's a very wordy way of saying that consciousness is always evolving. And that there isn't a goal. It's only the small self that sets goals. Okay, when I get to this point, everything's going to be fine. It's like saying, well, how much is enough capacity for unconditional love? You say, well, my capacity for unconditional love is continually evolving, continually growing, continually stretching, to use those words we used in the beginning of our session tonight. So how does the Sun Sen Ming put it? It says, there are no goals. As soon as we get a goal, we create another dualism. We create something to try and get a hold of. And it's not getting a hold of something. It's doing and being the most I can be in this moment. Those of you who have come forth and offered their hands and hearts, their vibratory fields, will be called forth in action. When you imagine union as a state of being, you imagine yourself floating in an eternity of bliss and love. And in fact, while you are in a body, you will attend to the body and requirements of form. You require shelter and food. You require warmth in the winter. And you require the benefits of interaction with your fellows in order to recognize what is true in every human being. The crisis come in all, but the recognition of this still remains precluded by the one who fears that she has no right to the kingdom. I know we've kind of looked at that many, many times. The kingdom, as we have said many times, the recognition, the awareness of the inherent divine is brought into manifestation through the claim, I know what you are in truth. The what, again, is always the manifest claim. And to claim I know what you are is to recognize the inherent divine and to bring it forth. This is an action you take first in the acknowledgement that it must be so because it can only be so, and then form the position that that is always so because it could never not be so. And because it is always so, there is no need to claim it. It simply is. So when I say I claim my alignment with my divine self, I'm just reminding myself of something that's already there. I'm not making anything new. You are the benefactor of the landscape you express in and through, in and through by nature of being. When we speak to will in this regard, we are speaking of the acceptance of the position you are taking. I have become an ambassador of truth, and in truth a lie will not be held. To know the self in truth is to move beyond the names things have been given, what things have been called, and the reliance upon language of history to predicate the future. To be the ambassador of truth is to decide that what you see before you will be revealed and then realized in truth. And to realize anything in truth is to see and to know the divine principle that must be the source of it. I'd like you to just to take this next paragraph in and see how it speaks to you. So just take a second, just kind of center yourself for a bit. As everything you see is lifted to the upper room where you now abide, the world you see becomes the sparkling reflection of the claims you have made in dominion as the one who knows who she is. You partake of the bounty of the kingdom simply by sharing it with anyone and everyone you meet. You become the ambassador because the action of the Christ as you is to know the Christ in all. And as the Christ is known in all is lifted by nature of being. So how did you lift the world today? Did you even remember? Mm-hmm. How did you allow yourself to get lifted today? Because that's the other side. I can't tell you the number of times when I have found myself in, let's call it a depressed kind of mood. Because the way I am still defining myself these days, I still define myself as being rather prone to down times or depressive times. I need to change my thinking around that. I realize that it still hangs around some. But I can't get over what I call the number of times when I have found myself in a dark place, when I couldn't lift myself out myself. And even my own prayers didn't seem to be helping. But somehow or another, it got lifted. And I often wondered, who was praying for me at that moment? I mean, maybe somebody who didn't even know me. How about this? Somebody you haven't thought about in 50 years crosses your mind. The name just comes to you, you know, and you go, oh, yeah, right. That was a good friendship, blah, blah, blah. I wonder if we stop for a minute and realize maybe that person's soul is asking me to pray for them at this moment. And that my prayer, whatever shape or form it might take, that my prayer will create a unique energy that couldn't be created by anyone or anything else. I don't know what that's going to do, but I know it's going to do something. So from this point on, I don't look at those as throwaways, say, well, that's interesting. I just guess who I thought of today? I would really begin to choose to make that a prayer in my life. And not even just wonder about what they might be looking for, but saying, you know, if there is a spiritual reason for that person entering my mind, that's probably what it's for. Or the next time you're in your car and you want to punch the button to turn on the radio, stop for a minute and say a prayer instead. I don't know how many times I've been listening to the car radio, and after a while I say, what the hell am I listening to this for? I don't really care about what this person's talking about. It's just yeah, blah, 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 blah. Stop. How can I nurture myself? How can I heal? How can I help heal the world? Paul is interrupting. What if someone doesn't want to lift? Something cannot be lifted. What do you have to say about that? I don't want to be lifted up. Leave me alone. I want to stay depressed. Leave me alone. Now, that's true on a particular level of our being. I don't deny that. I don't deny that when some of us are down or depressed or in a negative mood or a down, low energy place, that we almost want to add to that energy some more. You know, I think I'm kind of down, depressed, so I think I'll put on some sad music. Okay, or whatever else might happen. It's really interesting. So I'm not denying that that piece exists here, but I am saying that we can begin to look at that space from a higher level of reality and say, maybe that is my soul. Maybe that is my soul asking for healing. Maybe that's the world through me asking for healing. I can remember crying sometimes and realizing that my tears were so much bigger than what I was crying about. I mean, I might have been crying about a particular loss in my life, but I also realized at the same time that the sadness was touching something much deeper. That it wasn't just me that was crying. It wasn't just me that was grieving. And it wasn't just one thing I was grieving for.
Hey, Jerry?
Yeah, Jim.
Yeah. Since there was a couple of days this week, the last 2 days, I wasn't available for my assignment at my school site. Not because of me, it's just for the actual teachers were doing something. So when there's no students, I'm not, I don't really have to avail myself for that. So anyway, what I was able to do is actually spend more time in silence and meditation than typically I would do. And I had an opportunity just to do some journaling. Which was wonderful, just to put some things on paper, and that was healthy for me because next Monday I'll have an appearance day. I don't refer to them as birthdays, but I'll have an appearance day. So I just wanted to just to put some things and just to meditate on some things in terms of where I'm at. And and also my for me, my go-to if I'm feeling like low energy or blue, whatever the case may be, melancholy, is to find something, anything, just to be grateful for.
Yeah. Thank you. Thanks for that. And that's especially true. You know, I heard myself saying this a couple of weeks ago, that no matter how crappy I feel, I can always find something to be grateful for. Mm-hmm. And you can. Now, I need to be careful about that one, because it doesn't necessarily mean that all my feelings change right away, because they don't. But I don't have to look at my feelings, as we've said so many times before, I don't have to look at my feelings as being the truth. Or put a better way, perhaps, I don't need to look at my feelings as something to define me. I have them, but they're not who I am. And I might need to deal with them. I need to do something with them. But they don't define me, no matter where they might happen to be.
Jerry, that's actually one of the real gifts of, you know, being taken out of society for 4.5 years and being in this dark place for a while. It's easy to find things to be grateful for today. Mm. Very easy.
Mm-hmm.
What a gift.
There's another way that something that we might have looked upon as being a disaster can turn into a blessing as well. Let's see, where am I? Oh, okay. What if someone doesn't want to lift? Something cannot be lifted. What do you say about that? Your recognition of the inherent divine, the divine in you, the divine as you, is a recognition of what is only true and always true. And the mask the others wear cannot stand in the face of truth, because the mask he or she has been taken is a lie. The personality structure, while valid in its ambition, has never been the true self. Nor can it be. And when the true self is unmasked, when it is seen by the one who knows who she is, the divine in the one you are becomes the action of reclamation in the other. The divine is the divine reclaims. All you are doing is knowing the truth, and the reclamation happens. All you are doing is knowing the truth, and the reclamation happens. So you're not creating divine consciousness. You're not doing anything with it. You're just opening yourself to it, and that takes care of things. It cleans up the mess, detaches you from my identification with my ego and my personality consciousness. So again, it's not the lower consciousness reaching for the higher. It's allowing the higher consciousness to come in and do whatever work it needs to do. Something we can call that surrender, call that acceptance, call that a lot of different things. But doesn't their will need to be invoked? Don't they need to give permission? I remembered something Marion Williamson said one time, God will eventually outsmart your self-hatred. I love that. You know, to do anything about it, it's going to happen. I mean, you can probably speed up the process if you want to, but it's going to happen. Or the friend of mine, used to like to say, God's will be done. Now, that doesn't mean God is an outside force that's controlling everything, right? But the door to oneness that the Christ consciousness has opened, the door to oneness with the Father has been opened, and it will not close until everyone's through it. That's just the truth. You can wait, you can dangle your feet in the water, right? You can drag yourself in the opposite direction if you want to, but eventually it's going to happen. It's like, you know, that you're I'm sure you're familiar with footprints in the sand. Mm-hmm. You know, about seeing the one set of footprints and the Christ saying, well, that's when I carried you. Well, there's another version of that where the guy's looking at the sand and there's these two parallel lines in the sand. And so he asked Christ, he said, what are those two? He said, oh, that's when I dragged you kicking and screaming. Not me, huh?
No. Jerry, it also reminds me of the serenity prayer, the courage to change the things that I can and the wisdom to know the difference.
Mm-hmm.
God's will be done.
Says everything in there.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, Jerry.
Yeah.
I remember way back in the day, I heard this when I was in L.A. from a Michael Beckwith when I was at Agape. And basically what he said, you know, we can get there either through inspiration or there you go, man. there you go.
Got it. I would disagree with that to some degree because I don't think you can get there through perspiration.
True.
See, inspiration is opening myself up to divine consciousness and saying, I don't know. I don't know the answer. God does. Show me. That wonderful prayer from Emily Cady, right? And whereas perspiration is the little engine that could, you know, I think I can, which is lower consciousness trying to create higher consciousness. And it can't do that. First of all, it doesn't comprehend, it thinks it does, but it doesn't really comprehend what it is. And so, you know, what we are taught so often, and one of the reasons why I like this particular form of spiritual teaching is that it recognizes that the small self, the limited consciousness, the ego, the personality consciousness is trying to get to the top of the mountain, but it really doesn't know how to climb. Recognize that it's trying to do that, but we don't just push it aside and throw it away. We recognize it as being sort of this little child that's trying to do something impossible. And we love them. We embrace them. We hold them and say, oh, you know, you can't get to the top of the mountain by yourself, but I'll take you with me. It's almost like being the Christ to your lower consciousness. I know you want to get to the top of the mountain, but you can't get there by yourself, but I can take you with me. And even when we get there, you're still not really going to understand it a whole lot, but you are going to know we're together in this process.
Hey, Jared, that just sounds, well, to me, what resonates when you said that is that even with affirmations, that little engine that could over and over and over again, as opposed to my saying to myself, whatever the affirmation is, I don't know, but I am willing. I am willing, and putting that in there, I have no idea. I'm just willing.
And that is such a, to me, that's such an important piece. Willingness, this is what I consider to be missing parts of our prayer life sometimes. First of all, accepting the idea that 99% of the things, well, I wouldn't say 99%, but quite odd. Many of our prayers are about getting something. Not necessarily something material, but it could be peace of mind, could be whatever. Okay. Well, so a lot of them are geared to that particular aspect of things. That's perfectly okay because we're just human. But unless we add to that equation, the equation of asking for something, willingness, and the openness to the possibility that it can happen, then the energy is going to be cut short in the process. So when I pray, let's say, for inner peace or world peace, I want to be open. First of all, I need to be willing to do whatever it is I need to do to be able to gain that. And the second part of that is being open to the possibility that it can and will happen. Not just that it's a nice idea, but that it can and will happen. And unless I have those other two energies there, along with the asking, along with the desire, it's not going to work. Because the reason why it doesn't work is not because God's not doing it for us, but because I'm not connected to divine energy unless I am open to the possibility and open to the willingness. That's kind of like the bridge between human energy and divine energy. Ascension happens at the level of the individual through agreement, but it is rarely the personality self who agrees or would decide. In most cases, the personality structure surrenders. The way it's put in 12-step literature is the ego reaches a point of calamity and collapse. It can't continue to hold this illusion that it's created for itself. It just doesn't work anymore. The way I've been trying to do it, the way I've been trying to live my life, the way I've been trying to control my drinking or my drugging or whatever, it just ain't working. And so I could collapse in on myself, or I could say, yeah, this whole system that I've created collapses or falls apart, and now I open myself up to a higher reality because I know that exists. She cannot meet the opportunity for growth that is presented by the Christ by herself. So she aligns as the one who may receive it. The idea of surrender to one's true nature would be the example we would offer you. To surrender to the true nature is the claim, I know who I am. Or as Paul put it, I live now, not I, but Christ liveth in me. Remember that one? I live now, not I, not my old ego, not my old definition of self. I live now, not I, but Christ liveth in me. You are not enabling the divine to do the work of the divine. You are surrendering to its truth to embody as you, as the divine as you. To know the truth in another is to enable them to make their own claim. Now, the choice is theirs at the level of personality, but you can claim the divine in an individual or all those residing upon this globe. The effect is the same. You are claiming what is always true. And in this claim, you lift those you know that you are claiming, that you are realizing in the upper room by nature of being. You realize that when you raise yourself, there's no such thing as raising yourself up, because everybody goes along with that. I know I've mentioned this one before. There's a school in Buddhism, sometimes referred to as the great vessel or the big boat. And the philosophy behind much of its teaching is that the boat to enlightenment, or the boat to oneness or nirvana, whatever you want to call it, the boat doesn't leave until everybody's on it. The boat doesn't leave until everybody's on it. It's just what they're saying right here. You are claiming what is always true, and in this claim, you lift those you know that you are claiming, you are realizing in the upper room the nature of your being. In many teachings, you have had to humble yourself, to grovel before the altar. We say this to you. Humility is a requirement, but it may come in different ways. I am willing to learn, there's that word again, which Jim brought up. I am willing to learn. I am willing to know. I am willing to accept. I am willing to change, are all claims made in humility. I demand to change, I demand to know, I will be met as I say I should, is the claim of the small self, with its attachment to what the answer to this prayer is supposed to look like. Now, as you operate as the true self, you claim differently. I claim I know who you are, holds the divine as the claim. It is not a humble claim, it is a claim of victory. Because the divine knows the divine and recognizes its presence in all that it can encounter. The names you have been given in history, the heretics, the ones who were burned, who spoke the truth and were denied their place, are being released at this time, because what was heretical was generally heretical to an institution, not to God. The understanding here is that the claim of the divine and humanity's inherent divinity is the birthright that is being renewed. You do not grovel to receive your inheritance. It is your right, but you must say, I am worthy of receiving my inheritance, but I accept it in deep humility because I know the source of all things. Like the prodigal son when he came home. He had this whole little story cooked up. Father, I have sinned against you, sins against God and against you. I do not deserve to be called your son. Just let me be one of your servants. And the father said, Father, just said, I'm going to have none of that. I had a teacher years ago, one of my freshman religion teachers, a brother, Brother Stanley, his name was Brother Peter Russell. And he used to always give us these crazy ass assignments. You can imagine trying to teach religion to, you know, a classroom of 40 hormonally crazed 14-year-olds, okay? He always used to have an angle. And I remember one day he came in and he said, okay, he said, what's humility? And of course we all knew because the nuns taught us what humility was. Humility was not getting a swelled up head. Humility was not bragging about yourself. Humility was really not taking credit for anything. You realize that, you know, you're just sort of a peon. You're a cog in the wheel here. So he got, you know, collected all these answers that all the kids gave from everybody that everybody had heard before. And after he got about 30 or 40 answers, he just yelled out. He said, stop. He said, I'll tell you what humility is. Humility is truth. I never understood that until years later. But what he said, if you're good at something, you're good at something. Humility isn't pretending that you're not very good at it. Humility is what this book is talking about here, is saying pretty much the same thing. Humility is living out of the truth of who you are. And it's not pumped up spirituality to say, I am the divine as me. I am in divine consciousness. That's just a reality. You're not even creating that. It just happens to be true. And so, you know, part of my recognition here is asking myself, at least occasionally once, am I living out of my truth today? Not how I feel, not what I think I should be doing. Am I living out of my truth today? Am I living out of the recognition of the divine as me, the divine as you?
Hey, Jared.
Yeah.
It's funny. It's almost like you were there when I was journaling this afternoon. So that was part of what I was journaling for in terms of living my truth, living Jim's truth. And so I was going back and I was basically just extracting truths that I was living by default, or even truths maybe that were given to me by a parent, and asking me, is this my truth, or is this their truth? And so I had to define, like, okay, these are my truths that I'm living by. That was theirs, and that's okay. And then also too, knowing that these truths that are my pillars, in terms of I'm still open, they're fluid, because there could be other truths that come through and truths that I've defined as maybe they no longer serve me.
Yeah. And that is so significant, Jim, I think is, see, that's a whole other aspect of what we're doing here, along with our growing and stretching. As we're opening to higher and higher levels of truth and consciousness, but we are also beginning to recognize those thoughts and behaviors and ideas and patterns of thought and behavior that no longer serve me. And not judging myself for them, but saying, you know, I am opening myself up to releasing this energy, to let it be recycled, to do whatever it needs to do, because it no longer serves my being anymore. It did, probably once did serve me. Even if it was fear, it probably served me at one time or another. So I'm not even judging that or trying to throw that away. I'm saying, but I am willing now to let go of what no longer serves me, because What I want right now more than anything else is I want my energy to be focused on truth. So let me ask you guys this. What is the most important or moving tidbit of information or something that tickled your soul that is going to help you move further along the path these next couple of days?
Well, for me, is the recognition, the awareness is, am I living out my truth? That's one. And the other part is that recognizing that, am I allowing others to live out the truth of who they are, and there's no judgment. It's just a discernment. And so, it's for me, it's a moment to moment sort of thing in terms of, and I like what you said in terms of aligning my truth with the divine.
Thanks, Jim.
Jerry.
Yeah.
For me, to put it as simply as I can is, I don't have a blueprint. I don't know the way. I don't have any idea what the journey holds, what my journey is. All I can do is trust and follow. That's pretty much what I tell myself each day.
Okay.
Is I don't know. I don't know. I can just trust and follow.
It's kind of like that Thomas Merton prayer. My Lord God, I have no idea where I'm going. But I also know that I'm being guided wherever it is that I'm going.
He has the blueprint.
let's put it this way. We have a little piece of the blueprint, all right? Mm-hmm. Just don't get confused and think it's the whole picture, okay? Because it isn't. It's one little piece. It's what the next step is, maybe.
You don't think he has the whole picture? Huh?
Huh?
You don't think he has the whole picture?
Oh, he does. I don't.
Oh, okay. I thought you said he did. Yeah, he does have the whole picture.
I've got this little postage stamp, okay? I just don't want to confuse that with the big picture because it's not.
I know. Okay, I got you.
Anybody have anything else?
For me, it's just asking, put more simply, to help me to do the next right thing.
Say that again, Betsy.
To even put it more simply than that, for me, it's just asking to help me to do the next right thing.
Okay.
Because sometimes I don't know what's right.
Me neither. Or what's best.
Or what's best, yeah.
I quoted that Unity teacher, Emily Cady, a while ago, and her prayer continually was, God, I don't know the answer, you do, show me. And putting in our own language here, that the divine consciousness knows the answer and knows the direction, and it is willing to show me anytime that I'm open to it. But I got to be open to it. Like Jim was saying, I got to be open to the willingness and the possibility. But see, I have to be awake enough to know that I need to ask that question. Okay? I need to be awake and aware enough to know that I need to depend upon divine consciousness to give me the answer of what I'm looking for. Or else I'm still kind of huffing and puffing down here and doing the little engine of good thing. Okay. I know.
Jerry, I think earlier in my younger years, I was of the attitude of let's make it happen. You know, let's make what you want to happen. We're told that in the world when we're working, got to make it happen. Well, I don't feel like that at all. I feel like whatever is supposed to happen will come about that will be for my growth if I'm just ready and willing to accept it and let it unfold. Mm-hmm. So it's not trying to force anything. It's just let it unfold and it will be for my benefit and my growth. And when I look back at my life, most things have been things even that I thought were terrible things. They've all been for my growth.
Mm-hmm. So what a difference there is between make it happen and let it happen.
That's huge. That's really huge because that's the ultimate in surrendering, allowing it to happen as opposed to divvying up stuff. Well, you know, God, I got this. You take this. Or I got this. You do that. It's just like, you know what, God, I'm gonna trust you with this, but this, don't worry about that. I got this.
It's too big. I gotta handle this one myself.
Yeah.
Okay, we're going to take a few minutes to meditate on all of this. Take it in. Soak it up. Let it happen. I think probably a good definition of meditation too, isn't it? Letting it happen. So we're going to take a few minutes if you can put your stuff down and close your eyes if you like. Recall how we began this evening by getting a sense of our connection with one another, connection of all beings who are consciously doing work like this, or even unconsciously doing work like this. How we are not alone. How we can laugh. How we can hold one another in truth. How we can even realize or make fun of our clinging to limitation. And realize that we are all helping one another frame our existence by letting go of what no longer serves us. So as you breathe and allow your breathing to find its own natural rhythm, become aware that there is a small self that's constantly thinking, trying to figure something out. That's perfectly okay. It's just doing what it's supposed to be doing. But it's not who you are. And that there is another aspect of self we can call it higher consciousness, divine self, Christ consciousness, that is flowing. Stretching, being, And that there is purpose, there is direction, even though the small self might not understand or connect with that. There is purpose, there is direction. And this constant and continual wonderful enfoldment that is happening, happening, happening in unpredictable, beautiful ways. And we are grateful. Become aware of your breathing again. This rhythm, this life-giving rhythm. When you're ready to take a deep cleansing breath, stretch a bit. Open your eyes when you're ready. I'm always surprised when I open my eyes again. I mean, I know I'm looking at a computer screen and there's people around, but you're there in a very different way when my eyes are closed and we're meditating. Still there, we're still connected. But it's like this, the material world is suspended for a while. Cool.
Maybe we're more connected.
Thank you, guys. I hope you have a wonderful week.
Thank you.
Thank you, Jerry. Thank you.
Thanks, Margo.
Have a good week, everybody.
Jerry, everybody.
Love you guys. Happy Mardi Gras Day.
Me too, Greg. Thank you.
Oh, that's right. Mardi Gras. Thanks.